evening, everyone. We are reporting. I ask that we all rise for the pledge of the flag.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Miller, please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan.
Present.
Ms. Francie Smith.
Present.
Ms. Queeteck.
Present.
Ms. Laird.
Present.
Ms. Leon.
Present.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Present.
And Mr. Cologne.
Present. Thank you, Mr. Miller. I would like to acknowledge we have two local Boy Scout troops in the audience tonight, 3193 and 318 from Rosemont Lutheran Church in the audience. Welcome, everybody, for coming out. I will share, as I often do, if there's anything that goes on tonight that you're unsure of or procedurally doesn't make sense, whether it's the scouts themselves or any troop leaders, feel free to follow up with Mr. Miller, our city clerk, or any of us if you want to discuss anything after the meeting or anytime. All of our contact information is on the city website. We do have one citation tonight for recent city retiree Thomas Kiefer. Mr. Kiefer is not here this evening, so we'll make sure that he gets his citation in the mail. Moving on to approval minutes from the August 5th, 2025 City Council meeting. Any discussion on the minutes? Seeing none, the minutes stand approved. Moving on to public comment. Our first public comment is for anything that is not being voted on this evening. We have five people signed up, so I'll go through and once the list is exhausted, invite anyone else who wants to make comment. I will remind everyone we have a 5-minute time limit, so I will ask everyone to respect the 5-minute time limit. Our first person signed up this evening is Rebecca Young. And when you come up to the lectern, if you don't mind stating your name for the record for Mr. Miller when he does the minutes.
My name is Rebecca Young. I'm not an attorney. I'm just living in Bethlehem most of my life and I have a problem. I have a person, family, that is living next to me at 1734 Falcon Drive in Bethlehem. He is running a business out of his townhouse that he rents. His name is M-I-M-B-E-L-A. He goes under that Construction LLC. Juan, and again, M-I-L-B-E-L-A. He is running a business. I've lived next to him for 3 years. I have seen the most incredible things happen. I was asked by David Taylor through a letter at one point in time that I needed to give him information. Well, I showed him the LLC card. All that information is on his LLC card. It has his construction number, a name, LLC. It has his name. It has his telephone number and an email address on there. And basically, that didn't seem to be well enough. He supposedly went online to see if it matched up. My thing is it's been a year since I started just this. In a year's time, he just got back to me this morning. I believe he knows I'm going before city council. He said after all this time, and this is only a little bit of what I need to tell you, he said that they now are going to cite the people that this man is renting from in this townhouse. They're not going to cite him. They're going to cite the people that have that house. In essence, they're supporting him for what he's doing. They know exactly what he's doing. They have 5 to 6 to 7 houses in the city in Bethlehem. He does work for them all the time. On his so-called LLC thing, it says he does 10 things, one of which is plumbing. I don't know. I think I know a little bit about that. We better shut down our city plumbing learning area at the Bodex School, because the bottom line is it's saying he can be a plumber. He is not a plumber. He does not have a journeyman's license, a master's license, or anything like that. He comes from Peru, which I don't care. but I'm not letting anyone from any country come into my house that does not know what we're expected to do as Americans in our homes. You just can't come in and say, well, I'm going to take care of it. It doesn't work. You can get very sick with some of the things that a plumber has to take care of in your home. So I have that going on. His wife is also, in 2024, ran a daycare out of her house. She did not have a permit. She did not have it inspected. She had nothing whatsoever to do this. She had several children there. Her house was not inspected. They do have a dog. And again, we have to be concerned about our children when we go into a daycare, that they have the things that we need to keep our kids safe also. Just within the last couple weeks, they had been given dogs, I believe, from a man that is running a puppy mill. And he gave them several dogs for them to keep at their house to sell for him. This is just not acceptable. It seems like one thing right after another that it is illegal that I could list. He just keeps going from one thing to the other. It's all about money. It's all about his family and his control over everything that is going on. I've given counsel my paperwork with about, I don't know, 15 pages of things that I hope you will read and promise me you will read concerning what is going on. This is not a little thing. I've seen it progress and progress over the last 3 years alone. It's more than that. Like I said, he can do 10 other things in your home for you. Like I said, David Taylor said just this morning, called me up and told me that they're going to cite the people that own the house, not the man that's doing this. That's not going to stop him. He's going to go to anyone, unfortunately, and it's not being prejudiced. He speaks Spanish and only Spanish.
Thank you, Ms. Young.
Thank you very much.
Our next speaker this evening, Nicole Bonson.
Hi everyone, good evening. I'm Nicole Bonchik. I'm a school teacher. My husband John's sitting over there. We've lived on 8th Avenue in Bethlehem for over 17 years now. And when a neighbor passed away, and I try not to get emotional, but it's my house. When a neighbor passed away, the last thing we expected was a developer to buy it sight unseen, to tear it down, a single ranch home next door, to build a three-story, six-bedroom unit apartment. And we talk to people about it, it just is a story of entitlement and greed, because everyone seems to say this guy can do whatever he wants. And it's hurtful because we live in the city, we're taxpaying residents, and I'm off in the summer, I was able to do a lot of my own research, and in doing so there's really a lot that I think he should be held accountable for. With any type of development, not just knocking down a single ranch home, which is difficult to find in the city, as we all know. If you look at 1301.03, that zoning ordinance to promote public safety, public health, safety, and general welfare, it's already crushing our community. We have a neighborhood with single families, single family homes, close-knit neighborhood. We don't have anything like that in our area, so we're already losing sleep at night. Our mental health is suffering because of the whole situation. Other components underneath that, encouraging the most appropriate use of land. This house would be, this apartment building or complex, I should say, would be right on top of us. And he's seeking variances to get even closer. The current ranch home that's there is 15 feet from us. Siding to siding, 15 feet, we measured it. He wants additional feet to get even closer to us, which means this apartment building would loom over the top of us with decks on the side, and it would definitely affect our quality of living. Another point under that, 1301.03, preventing the overcrowding of land. I mean, that to me is a given. Conserving the value of land and buildings, lessening the congestion of traffic on the roads, protecting important natural features I have a giant willow tree. Maybe some of you have heard about it already. Willow, she has her own Facebook page. She's almost 150 years old. She was just accepted in the Big Tree program in the state of Pennsylvania. We're very proud of her. She's a healthy, huge tree with lots of wildlife, all kinds of birds, squirrels, everything else. And this development would certainly kill her, despite what the developer actually says, because her roots are there. She was there long before any of the houses. So her roots extend. We're trespassing on her land, really. They go under at least 5 houses nearby. Securing safety from fire, flood, and other dangers. If you actually look at the blueprint, our basement stairs, it's a finished basement bar. We have our family friends over. We would be walking right out of our basement into a retaining wall, like 2 feet away. So if we ever need a new washer, dryer, hot water heater, or God forbid, a medical emergency with one of our family members down there, there would be no access to them at all. Giving reasonable consideration to the character of the district. No consideration whatsoever. Guiding and regulating orderly growth and development. That also is a strikeout. Carrying out the authorized purposes of a zoning ordinance, which, as we all know, is to ensure responsible development. If he's granted these variances, it certainly is not going to be responsible development. And last, carrying out the purposes of the Pennsylvania Floodplain Management Act. You might scratch your head a little bit of that, but if you come over, and you're free to come over anytime and take a look at our property, in the back we have a hill. It's a small alley, Carter Street Alley, which is a city alley. It goes downward at a slope, and at the bottom, it's gravel. It's not paved, and that is actually resident owned. So the alley itself is not a throughway. And just the other day, I took a picture of the flood that was down there from all the rain going down. So if you build this parking lot, which the developer plans to do, that's going to take away all this grass that also absorbs the rainwater in a situation like that. So those are just some of the points I wanted to make. I did speak at the planning meeting on July 10th, and I plan to be here, obviously, for the zoning meeting next week. But I thought it was important to keep in the forefront and address maybe today. Because one of the big things that I know as far as, you know, awarding a variance is there needs to be a significant hardship that's not created by the buyer itself. And this hardship is obviously his, the fact that he needs variances. He knew what the land, the measurements were when he bought it. So that's all I'm going to say, right down to close to the end, right?
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Bonshay. Okay,
thank you. Sorry.
No.
I'm a little nervous and upset.
You don't need to apologize about anything. And as you referenced, the property in question is on the agenda for the Zoning Hearing Board next week.
Yes. Thank you.
Our next speaker signed up, Mr. Mark Will Weber.
Mark Will Weber from the direct the Citizens Advocate for Water and Sewer Stuff. I just want to resume. Last month I was in here and I was talking about some of the apps like AquaHawk and Ion Water that would really benefit the cities here. And in most places, it is a typical add-on once smart meters are put in. And I've continued to make a deep dive on this stuff and looked at various cities that have these things. And we really need something like that here. It would save a lot of wear and tear on people. It would save a lot of water. And it is something that really needs to be looked at, I think. Some of the cities I looked at included Roswell, Georgia, Redmond, Oregon, places all over, Appleton, Wisconsin. And a couple things struck me when I looked at some of these sites. First and foremost is, for instance, in Appleton, this guy, I think Bill, comes on and gives a little 2-minute video. And he's not only encouraging the citizens to download AquaHawk, but he's telling them, hey, this is going to save you a lot of money. It's going to help the city conserve water, on and on, and takes the people by step by step through it, shows them how to do it. Same thing in Redmond, Oregon. This guy Josh comes on and says, little 2-3 minute video, say, hey, you know, we want to show you guys how to download this app, AquaHawk. going to save you a lot of money. You're going to save the city a lot of water. And a place like Redmond, it's really important because they only get like 8 to 10 inches of water a year. The climatologists would tell us it's high desert or something. So I think we got 8 inches in June. So, you know, do the math on that. They're getting 8 to 10 inches a year. I think we get close to 50, 45, 50. But the thing that struck me is I came away and said, oh, okay, so this is how it's supposed to work when the sewer and water department actually works in conjunction with the people, makes them a partner in this sort of thing, instead of an adversary, an ally instead of an adversary. And there's a great idea, right? So these people aren't getting blindsided by mega bills out of nowhere. They're not, 3 quarters go by and they get this enormous bill in the mail. Instead, within hours, they know that something's gone wrong. And they catch it right away. This lady from Montrose, Colorado, where they have Aqua, is in Denver for the long weekend. And an hour into it, she realizes a pipe has broken back in her home in Montrose and gets on the phone and gets it fixed. Otherwise, it would have been a huge bill. The other thing that struck me is some of these cities have had it for 10 years. I thought this was a relatively new thing. But about the time Mr. Buskol actually got his position with, I think, the Donchez administration, these guys already were on this stuff and had it, and quickly followed it by giving their citizens these apps. So to put these smart meters in and not give the citizens access to these apps is a huge disservice, and it really should be looked into. And if council's looking out for their constituents, you guys should be asking for it too. And the mayor's office should be asking for it. And there's really no reason why we shouldn't have it. I've been occasionally critical of water and sewer here, but if I were to one day look at our site and see Mr. Boscola or Mr. Davis on there saying, hey, here's how you guys can download AquaHawk. And there's a think tank out of Chicago that shows that you can save as much as 15 to 20% water in your community if you have the people on these apps, because they begin to monitor, hey, you know, we used a lot of water last month, and maybe we need to do this and that. And so if the object is to save water, then this is your answer. And certainly it would protect the citizens from, you know, the kind of bill that we got and that the solitary old woman got on and on. Why is that so difficult? I know I'm probably perceived as a loose cannon, but I just want us to be treated like the people in these communities. And I have too many to list here, Mr. Cologne. We'd give me the Broadway hook and it'd be gone. So I'll just leave it at that.
Thank you, Mr. Woolbauer. Our next speaker is Ms. Rodriguez.
Hello. Diana Rodriguez, 315 Front Street. I'm here today, I've been here many times, because like many of you, I'm also a public servant. I'm also a teacher. And many of my own students are actually my neighbors, which is actually funny at times. I have to say I'm actually very concerned. And concern is a small word. I'm actually terrified by the trend that we've seen that is happening all through the city of all of these so-called housing opportunities that are mostly benefiting people who come here with higher incomes than what an everyday resident in Bethlehem can afford. And unfortunately, this is being done at the expense of our environment, our health, and the long-term housing stability of current residents. And we know that historically, this pattern of overdevelopment and abuse and environmental decline usually hurts the most diverse and racially diverse neighborhoods of our city, such as the South Side. And now, well, no, now really, like in the last 5 years or so, it also reached the West Side. We can see that from the multiple projects that we've seen in the last year targeting the West Side. And we see it over and over again. They're asking for these huge buildings, regardless of the little land that they have, which of course is going to prompt ridiculously variances for hardships they create for themselves, and they go as far as questioning the interpretation of clearly written ordinances that are there exactly to protect the population from this type of abuse. And I am talking from experience. I know what is to go through this because I live on the west side, right behind the Armory redevelopment. This is one of the biggest buildings in the west side, and it was brutally built in the middle of historic homes, which are not always the strongest one. And multiple residents were here in these very meetings begging the city to don't pass the building as it was, because we knew what was coming. And we are now dealing with it. Our neighborhood has become, unfortunately, more polluted, noisier, dirtier. It has worsened asthma, allergies. That building, that parking lot, radiates 135 degrees heat in the summer. And still today, we are dealing with the structural damage that that caused, with higher utility bills. And today, just like the case we saw here today, I'm also, for the second time in 6 years now, going through this again, because next week, another developer is gonna try to remove the only green relief that is left after the Armory with the 312 Hanover Street project. And yet, after all of this, I'm still hopeful though. I have hope, because I see that the city is taking the right steps. I see that there's gonna be some discussions about the Saldo updates, and they seem to me that they are more aligned with the climate action plan. And that gives me a lot of hope. But I'm just wondering if that is the vision that we have for Bethlehem, because we know that environmental sustainability is the way to protect ourselves against climate change and to really be here for the long run. I wonder why they're using language such as developers should consider, they should do it when it's practical. When we give them the option, we know they're not gonna care about our health, they're gonna care about profit, they don't care about our environment. So we shouldn't give them the option whether they want to protect our environment or not. We should make it, if that's what we're going for, we should make it a requirement. So please, when we're considering this, let's expect a little more from them, because we are all paying tax money, and I think if they get to develop here, they should get to contribute to our community as well. And I don't want us to make it easier for them to destroy our health and our environment, because we're trying to stay here for the long run. And it's sad to see, and I have experience with this, I've been through this, this is the second time I'm going through this, I can't believe it, that if you live in a part of the city where people get to be together because they have the financial means to hire a lawyer, they have a higher chance of keeping their trees, their greenery, and their oxygen. And the rest of us, we just keep getting more concrete, more heat, and we keep getting a sicker, and people who are gonna live shorter life. And I don't know how you call this, but this kind of division is creating a climate segregation right here in Bethlehem. Let's please uphold the ordinance that was recalled here, 130103, because there is a legal way to defend the environment and the health of residents in Bethlehem. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rodriguez. Next speaker is Ari Curatola.
Hi, I'm Artie Curatola, 813 Lawford Street in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Before I speak upon what I'm going to speak about, I have to say something that's been kind of bothering me for a while. A lot of people from out of town have been talking to me all the time about, all you can see is the back of the people's heads speaking. And, okay, the thing is, really, being a draftsman before I was a musician and an entertainer, performing artist, and also the possibility of your next mayor. The thing is, I was a draftsman. Okay, very easy. Let's get this pulpit, move two seats out in the front there, maybe four, I don't know. Put the pulpit over there. Have the people go outside, around to the pulpit so they don't trip over the step. You'll have room over here for a row of six or seven. In front of that, another row of four or five. Another row of three or four. Another row of maybe two or three. Why do we have all this space? I never saw any mariachi dancers or mariachi bands playing here or any belly dancers. You know, it's, why do we have the extra space? We don't need it. But the thing is, we could use the pulpit there so people will see the front of the people speaking, and the people can still be speaking for the city council. That's not what I wanted to talk about. But it's been bothering me for a while, so I figured I'd present it because it would be more efficient. We get more seats in case we get a lot of people, and people will be able to fix it. What I want to talk about is our reputation of our city is, well, before I even go to that, I represented myself at least 25 times in court by myself with no attorney, and I haven't lost just one. And just this morning, I won in Perryville, well, Bethlehem Township in New Jersey, a court case where an officer attacked me. But the thing is, we don't need stuff like that going in our cities. We don't have a city like that. We don't have officers that use excessive force, police brutality, conditions on becoming a police officer. Other cities, they do. That degrades the country that I live in. And now, what's degrading the city that I live in is we are being run by a fascist organization called ArtsQuest. And I say fascist because I don't say it loosely. If you disrespect someone and take away their freedom of speech, isn't that fascist? Now, one person from city council, I'm not going to mention anybody's names, but he stated they can hire whoever they want. Sure, but when it comes to an open mic, that's an open forearm. That's people speak to an open mic, or they play their music. They're expressing it for free. That is taking away somebody's freedom of speech, and that's a reflection on our city. We don't get this rectified. I got an attorney that's going towards the police officer who attacked me for breaking my civil rights. Now I'm going to have to do this to ArtsQuest, because another person from city council said I should sue ArtsQuest. So did my attorney. So the thing is, that's not going to be a reflection to my city. That's going to be good. So if you can straighten this out with ArtsQuest, I would accept a proper apology. 7 years to not be speaking at ArtsQuest because art doing music or comedy because they said I made racist comments. When I perform in Mexican restaurants all over the tri-state area, my music is in every major library in the country. They don't have to hire me. But you're all invited to see me perform Saturday at the Rosemont Fire Company with my band for free in Bethlehem from 1 to 5. It's open to the public. Also, on Thursday from 7 to 8 with my 54-piece orchestra, I play the big timpani drums with that. You're invited to St. John's Lutheran Church in Nazareth. So, however, I hope you can straighten this out with ArtsQuest, because my civil rights attorneys are ready to move on in with the situation. And I do have a case, because you can't take away somebody's freedom of speech, step on their Fourth Amendment rights. And ArtsQuest does that constantly with people. That's not how you should treat people. Not in the city that I live in. God bless you.
Thank you, Mr. Carthwell. That exhausts our list of who have signed up before the meeting, so I'll go around the room. If anyone is concerned with the angle in which you're recorded, that is a live microphone at that lectern over there. They're welcome to. So I'll start, Mr. Faber. So I'll start on the left. If anyone who's unfamiliar, start on the left, and I'll work my way around the room for anyone else who wants to address council tonight.
Hello, Harry Faber. First, I would like to commend Diana. I thought that was an incredible public comment. I thought she was so succinct and persuasive. Secondly, I would like to address Mr. Will Weber's comments. I just have an answer to your question about why not. It is because Aquahawk wouldn't be profitable under capitalism. The profit motive reigns supreme always. I'm sorry I missed the last meeting. You all lucked out that I forgot we changed the time. Now, first, I would like to use a quote I intended to say at the last meeting. The quote is from Gustavo Petro, the president of Colombia, which he said at the Hague Group Summit in Bogota. He said, quote, Gaza is simply an experiment by the mega-rich to show all the people of the world how they will respond to humanity's rebellion. They plan to bomb all of us." End quote. Now, I know I talk relatively about the same issues, whether it's the genocide in Palestine, or the destructive nature of imperialism, colonialism, or capitalism and all the contradictions that comes with it, but I rarely talk about myself. I worked at the Hotel Bethlehem as a banquet server for about 3 years during college before I started working as a server, bouncer, barback at three of the many bars we have here in the center city. I worked at the bars for about 2 years. I saw a lot, I experienced a lot, and I learned a lot. For one, I saw how differently the police interacted with people in comparison to those in other cities. I think it is a fair argument to say that we've got the best department in the whole of the Lehigh Valley. But when you all talk about crime, the law, how we have to enforce it, I have to laugh. It is contradictory to my own experience. Everyone knows how much cocaine and fake IDs are on Lehigh and Moravian's campuses. The staff and security at the universities know this. The bar workers all know this. Bethlehem PD knows this. But we aren't just locking up en masse all the rich, drunk morons now, are we? You're also not locking up the bar owners who look the other way when presented with fake IDs. The law says we should, but we don't. And I'd argue it's because of their socioeconomic background. Maybe you're lenient because they're young, but they're old enough to understand the consequences, and the bars generate lots of revenue. My point is, the law is only enforced when it's convenient, when you can get away with it. I mean, anyone who has studied anything in the humanities in college should be aware of the prison industrial system, its history, and why we justify the caging of tens of millions of people for the crime of being poor. Now, I saw a lot at the bar. I learned all people are capable of doing good and capable of doing bad. And I've been coming to Bethlehem City Council for over a year and a half now, and I've also learned a lot and seen a lot. And I want to believe that everyone who has heard me rant, holler, and carry on for the last year and a half wants to do good. I mean, that's why they come out here. And I want to do good. I want to do right. And I'll give credit where it's due. I actually agreed. I've never praised this person, I think, in the history of my coming here. But I actually agreed with a lot of the things Grace Gramsci Smith has said at the past few meetings that I haven't been able to address. And I've been impressed. I know you are not all bad. But this power structure and this political economy, this mode of production we have, is all bad. It perpetuates suffering and rewards indifference and obedience. It is one thing to be indifferent about apples and oranges, but the enslavement and kidnapping of families is not apples and oranges. A live stream genocide is not apples and oranges. To summarize, when the law says we must go along with federal quote-unquote agents, again, these are just people bestowed with tokens of power and weapons. When these people lock people up because of the color of their skin, their housing status, or where they were born, you shouldn't. Now it is time to take a stand. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Faber. Is there anyone else that left who wants to make a comment? Sure.
He's a little bit taller than me. Hello. Tim Porcelli. I live on 320 8th Avenue. I did not know this meeting was happening tonight, and I've never actually been in this room nor knew this was going on here, so first time being part of a city council meeting, which is pretty cool. I bumped into Nicole a few times where I became aware of her situation. I live on 8th Avenue, so I jog up and down the hill, not every day, though I try, so it's very close to my heart dealing with or seeing what's happening with this. I put myself in her shoes and I think about what would it be like to walk out of my basement and see a big retaining wall, as well as having this big apartment building on the west side. And you know, I really can't see it. And after looking at the plans too, it's hard to imagine one that they're going to be able to fit this building on that space, but also thinking about the impact around the houses who are going to be dealing with this. Certainly it's not going to be the people who's living there's fault, but it's going to be the fault of the construction company putting that building up. So I certainly don't have any, you know, facts or figures to speak towards this, but I think the quality of life certainly on the west side is going to be negatively impacted by this. We're going to see more traffic on an already busy street. I have two kids, and I don't let them play outside because I'm already worried about just the foot traffic. Not the foot traffic, but the cars coming up and down. So seeing more cars on our road, I think, will be also dangerous.
You can see that there is a growing concern for environmental decline in our neighborhood, so I really appreciate that we're going this way. And I expect nothing less from a city that has spent so much resources in a climate action plan, in hiring a sustainability officer, being called Tree City USA, So you might think this is a city that will come up with a way, which I think is what's going to happen here, to combine all of this environmental effort into zoning ordinances. I think one of the questions I have, they have a paragraph there, which is letter C, and I think it's, let me make sure, it comes from landscaping, 3949.19. In that document, that can be found on page 82. And section A talks about a street tree, so I'm understanding that everything that's described there will only apply to trees that are taken care of by the city or belong to the city. But letter C says other landscaping provisions. And in that section, it says that existing healthy mature trees shall be preserved wherever practical and protected during construction. That part of the ordinance does not refer to street trees. So can we understand this, since they are using the word S-H-A-L-L, as an obligation that developers are going to be required to take all of these measures for the protection of mature trees? And that's a question I have. I wonder if somebody can give me some guidance on that.
Well, this is your opportunity to comment. We will have discussion on the saldo, though, and a little bit later in the agenda, and council members can pose questions too.
Okay, so I wonder if somebody can pose that question for me, because I was just trying to understand what exactly that section means, because that does not pertain to street trees. That is to existing trees. It doesn't specify whether they are in the site or around. It just says existing mature trees, which we all know the value that it gives. That tree, that willow tree, is protecting my own environment, just as a linden tree that I have, because mature trees take hundreds of years to be there. And planting a few sap trees that we don't even know if they're going to grow, that's not going to make up for what we're losing. My next question is, I think I've heard, I wasn't here at the last meeting, but there were conversations, I've been part of the EAC meetings as well, and I hope somebody can clarify this for me. When a developer chooses to put several trees down because they are an inconvenience to the plan, or if they cannot meet the tree requirement that they have for a certain parking lot or a space, are they allowed to pay a fee in lieu of these tree requirements? I'm just wondering about that. If they are allowed to pay a fee when they have to put so many trees down, or when they cannot meet the tree requirements. I'm truly hoping the answer to that is not, because the message we're gonna be sending is that they can pay for our oxygen, they can get away from environmental standards just by paying for it. So I have to ask, how much is our health and oxygen worth? And the last thing I want to know, if it's this ordinance that keeps being repeated by so many people who are being affected by these developers, 130103. This is our current coding ordinance, which clearly states that zoning has to protect the public health, safety, and welfare, and it needs to prevent overcrowding, fire, flood risk, and the destruction of natural features. That is already our ordinance. That's already there. So when plans are proposed in front of us, and we know that the result of that is going to be the destruction of natural features, isn't the plan in violation of this ordinance? Why are we saying we don't have a legal way to protect the natural features of all the adjacent homes of people who are being affected by this development? We already have the ordinance for this. So I'm kind of here learning with you, because I'm curious about this, because we already have an ordinance that requires developers to protect existing natural features. And it doesn't say the ones that the city own, it says the land and natural features. So these are just some curiosities that I have to learn. I've learned a lot this year, so thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Ms. Rodriguez. Is there anyone else for Wide Center who has questions? Mr. Hackett.
Hello, my name is Bud Hackett, and I live in Bethel. I am here on the soapbox tonight to talk about, thank you, here tonight in my soapbox to talk about the way that council has approached the Saldo. But before I do that, I want to welcome the young ladies who are scouts here tonight. It's great to see them. I remember bringing a scout troop to council many years ago, and it was a great experience. With regard to Saldo, I have reached out to some council members and received no response to my concerns. I previously spoke at council. Of course, we don't get a response from that. I did, however, write letters to the newspapers and received quite a bit of response. So, you know, it's not just me with some of these concerns. My issue with the Saldo, the subdivision and land development ordinance proposal, is not so much about many of the regulations, but about whether or not we truly understand the costs, benefits, and impacts of some of the changes that have been proposed. In my opinion, the proposed changes to the ordinance regulating land development will raise the cost of housing and other buildings in the city. Recently, when staff discussed the Saldo, they said they had received a lot of input from government agencies, but not necessarily, they didn't mention receiving much input from the public. It is very hard in reading the ordinance to compare the old with the new. They don't make it easy. We were told that the most important changes to the new regulations come from the Climate Action Plan and the Environmental Advisory Committee. They didn't seem to want input from other special interest groups in the city. It is not clear from the presentation that we heard what the changes are, what is the motivation for each of the changes, what's driving it, why do you want to make that change, and more importantly, what are the impacts of the changes on the costs of housing development? So how much is it going to cost for each of the changes in the proposed ordinance? You should at least know that before voting yay or nay on it. I was trying to figure out, in looking at it, this will sound cynical, how much climate will the new regulations save? Do we know? It sounds good, but what are the impacts of these proposed regulations? It would have been interesting, given that you received input from Climate Action Committee and the Environmental Advisory Committee, why wasn't there an attempt made to look at the Saldo ordinance and say, what is it we could change in our city to help reduce the cost of housing and other building development in the city? That is being done in other communities. They are looking at their regulations and saying, we could streamline these and reduce the cost. If you'd like that information, go to MSNBC, Morning Joe, where I heard about it, or call me and I'll get you that information. So my major point is that it is very likely that the new regulations will raise the cost of housing and other development. And this is how housing costs get out of control. One new regulation after another, one small bit after another. And let's see, it would be very interesting to me to know, since the changes seem to be driven by the Climate Action Initiative, what kind of improvements in our climate are we likely to achieve by these regulations? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Ack. Is there anyone else in the Wide Center who wants to make comment on anything before? Yes.
Hello, Valerie Noonan. So I'm also here to comment on the subdivision and land development ordinance, perhaps not in the same capacity as some of the other commenters. I'm actually partly, at least, in agreement with Mr. Hackett that I found it difficult to actually review the documents, because my first thought when thinking about this is a new ordinance replacing the old one is I want to know what's in the old one versus the new one, right? So I went to the ordinances on the city website and I tried to click on the existing subdivision and land development ordinance and I got a 404 not found page. So I clicked around a little bit. I went to the Wayback Machine, which if you're not familiar is just a web archive that snapshots web pages on specific dates and times. The page had only been archived a few times, but at every snapshot I looked at, it was a 404 not found page, which means that that set of links hasn't been working since at least 2022. Thankfully, because of the way that it was all laid out, is we have the numbers of the ordinances, and then it's like 0.01, 0.02, 0.03, and so on. If you clicked down a few numbers, you could get to a link that would take you to the entire ordinance, but it was not the top level link or even the first few links that I tried. So it's difficult to actually access the existing ordinance online, and I thought you should be aware of that. So after that, I took the ordinance when I finally found it, and I tried just to run a comparison between that file and the one proposed on the agenda, and they were just not similar enough for that to be useful, which that's fair. I can see why it was proposed as repealing and replacing rather than making amendments, because they were two different documents to compare using regular technological means. Unfortunately, I haven't had the time to review this new document in its entirety because it's over 100 pages long and I just did not have the time. I know there's been, it's kind of been circulating perhaps for a meeting or two back, and that there was a hearing, and that's on me for not getting in on that, but I do think that for ease of use, for transparency, for everyone to get the chance to review and comment on what they want to comment on, documents like that should be correctly accessible, and it seems that that one was not accessible for years, properly speaking. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Newman. Is there anyone else in the Y Center who wants to make comment on anything we're voting on? Sure.
Bill Shire, 1898 Avenue, about Saddleville. It's a lot. 100 pages. And as you may have noticed, I had four comments on the first 10 pages. It took me 5 minutes to get through the first two comments, and then I gave up. I have a feeling that council may feel that it's a lot to deal with. Let's just pass it and we'll amend it later if we have to. Not the best way of going about things. Reminds me of the same thing happened with the zoning ordinance about 12 years ago. That was also close to 100 pages, if not. Also presented in the middle of summer. Perhaps just a coincidence. But on Saldo itself, I'd like to speak about the new medical buildings on 8th Avenue near Eden Avenue, which did pass the Planning Commission. And there's, of course, four corners of that intersection. One is a bank branch, so we'll forget about that. Two of them are St. Luke's, and one is Lehigh Valley Health Network, the new buildings. And I want to comment on the design. I think we should be paying a little more attention in this city to design than we do. Although, in reference and deference to Mr. Hackett, style does cost money. And Rocky and I agree on that. He's a developer that I run into from time to time, and we have good conversations, three times actually. And I did criticize him on the Boyd Apartments, saying it was too big and too plain. But we agreed that style does cost money. But these two new buildings are, well, I have to give St. Luke's the edge there. On the northwest corner is the oldest of the three corners, and that's St. Luke's, and it's not as good as the St. Luke's on the northeast corner, which is what they call the postmodern style of architecture. It has some vague indications to medieval architecture. The new buildings from Lehigh Valley Health Network, two of them, I don't know what that style of architecture is, if it is even a style. It reminds me of the new Brockle School. It looks like a bunch of cheap buildings crammed together. And I don't know what the answer is. I'm fond these days of just laying out questions and not answering them. But it's something that's worth thinking about. And if I'm permitted a little bit of an aside here, Mr. President, it's not being voted on tonight, but I'll make it very short. Public sculpture, and I'm particularly thinking of something called the Cloud on Founders Way on the south side, is one of the most awful pieces of sculpture that I've ever seen in my life. And it is my firm conviction that any piece of sculpture, public sculpture, should be subject to a referendum. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Shire. Is there anyone else in the Wide Center who hasn't had an opportunity to speak who wanted to make comment on anything we're voting on tonight? Anyone to the right? All right, that concludes our public comment. Thank you, everyone. Again, I'll remind everyone, if you want to talk to council after the meeting, you're welcome to stick around, or you can follow up with any of us via email or the city clerk. So now we're going to move on to old business. Any old business for members of council? New business for members of council? Oh, was this for old business or new business, Mr. Callan?
No.
New? Go ahead, Mr. Callan. There was no old business, right? Okay, go ahead, Mr. Callan.
I got a number of items tonight. First of all, I want to thank the scouts for coming here. I was a Cub Scout, a Lee Love, when growing up, and a Boy Scout for, 3 years. And I look back at it with fond memories. I went to Mincy Trail Camp, and I went to Camp Buck Mommy up in upstate New York, just above Lake George. Great, great time. So thank you for coming here, and I think you'll look back at the time that you were about this organization with fond memories as you get older. So thanks for coming. Anyways, Ms. Collins, you got a second? The first thing is, during Fest, I had a lot of people tell me that the lights are out again at the steel stacks. So can we get, I don't know who is dealing with this again. I handled it last time. I had a lighting company, an engineering company, call up Wind Creek, and they did get it fixed, but I don't want to keep calling the same people, so I don't know who.
I believe they're on to the extent that they were fixed previously, which is a few of the lights are able to illuminate. I think there's a limited spectrum of colors that they were able to put back on. And certainly, I mean, it is not illuminated like it used to be, and it does require attention. You know, we do communicate regularly with Wind Creek, and there are active conversations about potential future investments to actually make what fixes might be necessary.
What wasn't that a little part of the agreement, is that they were going to maintain them?
There was an agreement with Sands, correct, that I believe was...
Yeah, and that agreement rolled over with Wind Creek, I would assume, with the purchase.
That's my understanding.
Can we check on that and just get those things lit up? I mean, that we kept those there for a reason, to honor all the people that worked in the steel over a 100-year period.
It is Wind Creek's responsibility, yes. It's not, you know, the city.
Is there something that the mayor could do? Could he call someone else to put some pressure on them?
As I said, we're having regular conversations with them on a variety of topics.
Yeah, I keep hearing these things and nothing's getting done. So the second thing I wanted to talk about was, you know, a lot of the speakers that spoke here tonight, they're talking about all these residential, an 8-unit going here, a 10-unit going here, a 6-unit going here. We all notice there's been an extreme amount of pressure being put on the rental market. And I don't know why, I don't know if it's you or the mayor or whoever it is, but obviously something's not moving along with the Martin Tower site. We've had, I think they're allowed to put 1,000 units in there.
They are.
Yeah.
They could do that today.
Yeah, but they obviously can't. Have you talked to them?
We've gone over this many times.
All right, so I wasn't on council tonight, okay? But do you remember what the deal was that the developer offered to the city in lieu of fees? I know that Mr. Herrick came in here from New York.
So currently they are zoned for 1,085 units there. They
right.
could build that today if they wanted to.
Right. But they obviously can't because...
It is currently the densest residentially
right.
zoned district.
What was the agreement?
I believe they have asked for approximately 1,700 units on that site, which would make it far and away the densest district. That's not something that we as an administration would decide. If they wanted to change the zoning there for that would be a decision of city council. So there's not really a deal to negotiate, but that is one of the things that they would be looking for from city council.
Well, I think
it's not something at this point that we have supported. We felt that was too dense, even for that area there, especially when they can build 1,085 units currently today under the zoning that's there.
Yeah, I think if you reached out and talked to them, you would find that I think those numbers are changing drastically based on the pressure of the market right now. But I wasn't on council at the time, so my question is, when Mr. Herrick came in, and I don't know if anybody that was on council at the time can answer this, what was the offer that they audited, that Mr. Herrick offered to the city for the in lieu of fees and for the affordable housing?
So I believe what you're referring to is that in addition to asking for a zoning change to increase from 1085 to 1700, they're also looking for a 10-year tax abatement. So they
alert.
Want to pay a graduated tax rate.
Right.
They want to pay probably 0% of their increased property tax values in the first year, 10%, 20, 30, et cetera, through alert.
Right.
Which is a substantial cost to the city. And we've identified previously in conversations, plenty of public benefit that has already gone into that site. They have a $9 million RCAP that they used to build those medical office buildings. They have a CRIS designation on the entire site. You know, it's been probably a couple of decades of history and public incentives going in as the market has changed. But you had said that you weren't around for previous conversations, so I was just reiterating some of the conversations we had before.
So on
balance, again, that would be a question for City Council. If City Council was willing to pass a tax abatement for them on that site, and you could build in a payment in lieu of structure if you wanted to support affordable housing as well there.
My goal is to try to, I mean, instead of sticking these rental units in these pocket areas within a city and upsetting all the neighborhoods that are there, I think if we added, if we added 1,085 units to that site, I think that would put a tremendous, supply and demand. I think that it would lessen the pressure of rentals in the city.
I don't disagree that site is an excellent site for additional residential, for affordable residential, and tried to push for that as well, for it not to just be 10,085 market rate units.
But so what was the deal that was offered to the city? I don't know this exactly, but from what I was told, they offered $4.5 to $5 million or something like that in lieu of fee for the LRTA. Now, you know and I know, but just so everybody else is on board, right now we're getting zero taxes on the property that, other than, you know, the land that's not developed. So if getting a LRTA, it basically comes out to fit over a 10-year period, they pay 50% of the taxes on all the new development. Right now we're getting 0% of zero. I think 50% of 200 million of the development, or whatever it would be, is substantial. And I think that's not only school district taxes and city taxes, but county taxes. So obviously something's not going on over there, because there's no activity at all with the residential component. So from what I remember is that, and I don't know if anybody on council would like to chime in, it was, they offered $4, 5, 6 million or something like that for the city to get affordable housing, to build affordable housing or to buy land. They also offered, from what I understood, a parcel of land. So do you remember
there were different conversations over time. At points when we asked, would you be willing to build affordable units on this site?
But they weren't.
The answer was definitively no.
Right. So instead of that, they offered millions of dollars in lieu of fees, which I think Ms. Grace Cramsey Smith, and if I'm wrong, correct me, I think it was like 20,000 or 25,000. I think your new ordinance bumped it up to 52,000 that the developers would have to pay in lieu of fees. Have you had any conversations with them in the last year at all about what's going on? What can we do to help this process along?
Our office has worked regularly with them on the development of the medical office buildings.
Right, I know on the medical, I'm talking residential.
Sure. They have not come back with a new plan or a new proposal.
Has anybody reached out and said, hey, what's the problem? Why isn't this going on? Because there's obviously some reason why they're not moving ahead at all right now. There's nothing going on over there now.
They are welcome to reach out anytime.
They are. Okay.
As I said, you know,
wouldn't the mayor be interested in adding?
We communicate with the developer, at least one of them, on a regular basis, at least regarding the medical office building. So if at any point he or his other partner had a new proposal with respect to residential for us to review.
Does anybody on council remember what the deal was? Because I wasn't part of the meeting. I know he met individually with each individual council member at that time. Does anybody remember what the deal was? Because from what I understand, it was a substantial amount of money that they were willing to give to the city, so the city could use that to purchase land to buy the low-income housing area, or to build low-income housing. So I don't, you know, did you remember what it was?
I was on council at the, addressing the chair, I was on council at the time. I believe that was correct. The only question that I had for the solicitor at the time, which was not our current solicitor, and this was when we all first got on council, when I met with him, he said that he would give roughly like $4 million for in lieu of fees if he could get a LRTA. And at the time, my question was like, oh, that kind of feels like quid pro quo, like if I give you this, you'll give me that. That was the only question I had, but outside of that, I don't remember any other conversations, and I had assumed that they were going to present something to council at some point. But then at least on my part, he's never reached back out. He's never, and I actually didn't ever really get clarification on would that be a quid pro quo, because, again, at the time, very junior, if someone says, if you give me, you know, a couple $1 million tax abatement, I'll give you this, that felt, I wasn't sure if that was within our right. If you want to answer that now, you can, or we can talk about it. I can form the question.
Question.
It's not a
current
question. I think I want to frame it better, and then we can talk about it maybe at another council meeting, because I just wanted to make sure I understood it appropriately. And then my only other hang-up was that it had already received a couple $1 million in revenue. But again, at this stage where it is just sitting there, I think there should be some movement. But those were questions that I just had internally when I had the conversation with him. So it was nothing that I think we discussed as a council at any point. I think it's a conversation worth having, because we do have to see movement at that site. But I thinking back at that time, I believe that you're like, that sounds what I remember the conversation I had with him when he.
I just remember that the money the I think there was $4 or $5 million. I don't know what it was, but the money that they got from the state was before the knocking down of the tower and also the asbestos abatement.
I completely agree with you there. It's just when, again, like this was probably one of the first conversations I had on council. So when I'm looking at an area and I hear they've already gotten this many millions of dollars and I'm learning what RCAP is and all these things, I'm like, well, geez, we've already sunk a substantial amount in here. And then my concern was when they originally said that they wanted to do 1,700 projects, I appreciate the density there because, as you said, it can sustain the density there. The roads are built for it. Burnside is also right there, though. And my concern is with that much density, what would the effect be on Burnside? And I do remember him saying that he would partition an area of the parcel if the city wanted to develop affordable housing. At the time, I wasn't quite sure what that meant. But you're explaining it accurately. Those were the reservations I had at the time, but those were not ever questions that I think any of us really addressed as a council, because nothing was presented by the developers at council. I think that if they had presented something, I think it's a conversation that we could have had, like the difference between 17 versus 1,000. You're reaching for your mic, so maybe I'm like, am I going off track here? I think it's a worthwhile conversation, because as you said, it's just sitting there. We need to do something there, and if they're willing to move on 1085, which doesn't need anything from us, then they should. I think they should present something, because I think we all want to see some kind of increase in residential that's not burdening the community.
Can council, if we agreed on, my whole goal in this is trying to take the pressure off all these little side neighborhood rental units. I think if we could put 1,085 units in there, which is the number they were allowed in there, if we could do that, I think it would take an enormous amount of pressure of all these developers going in and buying all this land up and next to their house and this guy's house and that guy's house. I think it would help a lot. Now, I know they don't want to put low-income housing in there, and in lieu of fee was set up for that, which I think is an enormous amount of money. I think if they gave us $5 million for the in lieu of fee, I don't know about everybody else, but I talked to two other members on council who were 100% for that. I know that another member on council who's coming in January wants to get something moving over there. And I don't know why there's no communication or why, you know, like, let's get moving with this. Let's take the pressure off these developers going into the neighborhoods. Let's get their $4 or $5 million. And I'm not saying that was the number, but that's what I heard. Let's get their $4 or $5 million. If they need Alerta, let's do the Alerta. And what basically the Alerta is, if they build $250 million, we're collecting 50% of the taxes on the $250 million assessed property versus no taxes because there's nothing being built. I mean, I keep on hearing, we keep on hearing, I think three different people talk tonight about rental pressures in the city and these development, and here we got this 1,000 unit property over there, which we, and there's absolutely no activity or communication with the administration on it. We've heard nothing on it over a year on the residential component. And the two medical buildings are done. So that's over with. And now we'll be collecting taxes on that because it's being leased. So let's get the rest of this property going so we can take the pressure off these other neighbors and neighborhoods. I mean, to me, it's a no-brainer.
You can tell them that we're happy to talk anytime.
That's your job.
And as I've said, we've been in constant communication with them. We speak with them regularly.
That's not true. You might have spoke to them about the.
Mr. Calhoun, I'm going to ask you not to question motives and integrity of what's true, what's not.
I won't question her. I know for a fact they haven't had any conversations with about the residential component. That's why. Right? I'm not saying that she's lying.
Explanation of the whereas aspirational clauses in the beginning. So, you know, by passing the zoning ordinance that says in a high density residential district you could build, you know, 3 units on X size lots with these dimensions, like we are saying, we said in 2012, like that is what's appropriate, that is what's good for the, you know, neighborhood. It is what accomplishes all of those whereas goals that are described in the beginning. So if there are developments that do not meet certain requirements of the zoning ordinance, you know, we send those, our Planning and Zoning Bureau sends those to the Zoning Hearing Board, a quasi-judicial board, to determine, you know, if they are, you know, can meet a variance, or, you know, hardship, you know, et cetera. That's not for us to decide. It's set up that way in our structure for the Zoning Hearing Board to decide. There are some instances where we will perhaps go and play a more active role. So, for example, with the 312 Hanover case, like, we will have the solicitor's office there defending the city's position. That's because in that particular instance, there is, as Ms. Rodriguez pointed out, there's an interpretive issue. So it's not just that somebody is saying, you know, we don't comply with the zoning, but give us a variance because we have a hardship, and then that's like a factual sort of question. You know, there's actually an interpretation of what our law says, and so we will have our solicitor there to defend what the zoning ordinance says in that instance.
So I guess I'm aware of like the variances and how the process goes, but I guess what I'm wondering is, you know, generally each administration, your leaders usually have a vision for what they want, their plan for the city. I mean, you could smile, but it's real. Let's be real. And right now, I think we're looking at, you know, in my mind, and a lot of the people that talk to me, people here tonight, and everyone I talk to, all my constituents again, are really concerned about the fact that we're just, you know, building all these apartments, and especially when they look at what is doing in the neighborhoods where we're looking at taking down homes. And I don't bring this up because this is like one instant and isolated. It's not. It just seems like it's more and more. So I'm wondering, what's the administration's vision, or where do they stand on that? And because I know other people that have been on zoning hearing boards said every mayor has always given them a no or spoke to them saying, yeah, we're in favor of this or we're not. So I guess I'm just wondering, what is, you know, the vision for the city or the administration as far as this?
I mean, as you in particular know, I mean, housing is a very complicated issue. It's why we've been talking about it for many years. There's many different approaches to, you know, addressing our housing supply and demand challenge. You know, the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission has identified that we are currently almost 1,100 units short in the city of Bethlehem alone. By 2050, we're going to be close to 5,000 units short. In the Lehigh Valley in total, I think it's something like 9,000 short currently across the Lehigh Valley and 54,000 by 2050. Like, those are massive numbers, and it's hard to ignore that there must be an increase in supply, and I agree with Mr. Callahan on that point. But of course there is a balance, and so we talk consistently about neighborhood compatible development. Now, neighborhood compatible development can look like a variety of different things in different parts of our city. You know, currently we're using the zoning ordinance as it's written. Like, that is our definition of what's appropriate for neighborhoods. But as you know, we've talked about in the opening doors plan, like, looking back at our zoning. We're starting with looking at accessory dwelling units as one component, and we're doing a deep dive and considering that across the city. But I think, you know, there's opportunity to look, you know, broader than that and to consider, you know, what are infill opportunities. And I don't think that infill opportunities in neighborhoods are necessarily a bad thing, but they must be compatible with the neighborhood. And there are plenty of, you know, examples across the country where you can build townhouses, you know, next to a single family home, and it can work, but not without, you know, thought and consideration for appropriate scale and size and all of those things. So, again, this is just one small piece of a very large conversation. But what I'll also add is, you know, we are subject to how the market is functioning. And that's just a part of, I might agree with Mr. Faber on that point, right? But, you know, because of the nationwide and the Lehigh Valley-wide increase in housing demand, housing costs, and the lack of supply, like, it is currently, as long as we are so deficient in supply across the Lehigh Valley and, you know, in Bethlehem, but across the country as well, as long as we're so deficient in supply, it is more profitable for anyone to tear down a single family home and build things that are potentially out of scale for a neighborhood, or to consolidate lots. We don't want, like, we don't want people buying up 9 lots in an area and consolidating them and building massive out-of-scale, you know, buildings. We don't want that, but currently in the market with the supply and demand what it is, that is the profitable approach, and it is, you know, allowed, a property owner is allowed to do those things by zoning, and we are limited sometimes in what we can do. So I think, you know, it's a combination of approaches to address all of these issues.
But the very short answer is thoughtful
neighborhood compatible development.
My concern is that I'm not seeing that, you know, we need more rental units. We need 1,100. I mean, we could almost have that if we could get Martin Tower going. But my concern is what are we doing to get affordable units? You know, because the problem is most of the units people in the city cannot afford. And so what are we looking at? I mean, it seems like we're not really getting ahead in this situation here.
I'll definitely give a
and
plug.
If, you know, somebody needs a variance, that could be, you know, a tool or an incentive or a carrot that we have. You know, that's what they do throughout the country, and I just don't see us doing that. And that's concerning to me, that we're just putting up so many more units, but none of them are affordable.
Well, I'll definitely put in a plug. We're having our next opening doors update meeting, quarterly meeting in September. I don't remember the exact date, but we're doing quite a bit of housing work, and we do report on that regularly. And I would encourage everyone, you know, to come to that meeting and look through what we're working on, what we're checking off in, you know, carrying out the opening doors plan. But when you're talking about affordable units, it is extremely expensive to build affordable units. It takes a lot of public incentive. It takes a lot of time. We're working. I think we're particularly proud of our partnership with LVIP and the project that we're working on in South Bethlehem, the Gateway project. It's going to be 120 units, two-thirds of which are going to be affordable, and a third will be marketed. You know, it's a mixed income development, which is the model for most affordable housing development in the LIHTC space, so the low income housing tax credits. We're waiting for our application to hopefully get a favorable result. I think in September we'll be hearing back on that. Those projects take a lot of time and they take a lot of effort. We're also working with the Housing Authority very closely. Councilwoman Kwiatek or Leon can talk to you about the Choice Neighborhoods project, which we've talked about before, but I would love for it to come and get a more comprehensive update at the opening doors meeting. But that's a project to take 196 public housing units and, you know, completely reimagine that Pembroke neighborhood, and it could add up to a total of about 400 or 450 units in that area. Again, a mix of those public housing, some, and then on a range of affordable up to market rate in that area to create mixed income opportunities and like housing choice, so people aren't just congregated or are stuck in affordable units, but have opportunities to grow. And we're hoping to, you know, work with Habitat as well for some potential homeownership opportunities as part of that. You know, and that's a huge chunk of like our time and energy is into these kind of projects, these kind of partnerships. A lot of public dollars need to go into that, and so those are, you know, decisions we all have to make moving forward about what we're able to support in terms of gap financing. But you know, there's a lot of movement there. And then we also know that, you know, in terms of affordable, keeping people in their existing affordable units is of course a component of that as well. It's why we work so closely and so well with Community Action Development of Bethlehem. We fund their tenant organizer, who does an excellent job of, you know, working with individuals who are facing.
Excuse me, Ms. Collins. I know, but I think we're getting off target here. We're talking about the developments, and I know all the things we're doing in the city.
You're asking about affordable.
Yeah, and I think about affordable too, keeping them in their units. We aren't doing that at the New Street and Garrison development. But moving on to speaking with developments, can I just ask for the Martin Tower? Because I know I did meet with developers, and they were, you know, the thing was, you have a LURD, and it's not like, you know, they're paying to get something. It's like the LURD is there, and they said they would like to do the LURD, and they would pay the fee in lieu, and we would get multi-millions in affordable housing, which would be great, as well as land to put affordable housing on there. But I guess I'm wondering, because based on your conversation before with Councilman Callahan, How do other developers get to LRTA? I mean, you know, do they call and say, hey, you know, I have this, can I get LRTA? Or do you say, hey, you can get the LRTA? Like, how does that work?
That's a great question. We have never done a singular LRTA. We've never done a one-off LRTA. We've never done a LRTA in response to a developer asking for one. So in the city, traditionally, I mean, we've had LRTA as a successful incentive for 30 years. And we've always done it strategically by a district. So, you know, it started mostly in South Bethlehem, the former Bethlehem Steel site. I mean, it is an economic development tool more than a housing tool traditionally, and as it was intended originally. So we looked across, you know, the former Bethlehem Steel land. We looked at blighted properties, because we must not forget that it is not for any property. It is for blighted properties.
So for the 510 Plass was in that, so that they would just say, we'll get the LRTA because it was in the Bethlehem Steel blighted property?
Because it was in one of the districts that city council would have approved. So for example, you know, you as a member of city council have voted for the Southside LRTA 2 district. That was a second iteration of a Southside district. You probably voted for the affordable housing LRTA district, which again was a district. And so, you know, our office would look, we would really be driving the train on what incentives are necessary, like a but-for incentive to make properties or an area developable. And, you know, we would go property by property. We would talk with, you know, different developers, but we would ultimately be creating like a full district looking at overcoming blight and other kinds of challenges. We're very hesitant to, as you're describing, respond to individual developer requests. And other communities do that. Easton does that, for example. But our experience is that is a very slippery slope, because obviously every developer wants a tax incentive, every single one. So if we set a precedent whereby we are responding to each individual request rather than being forward-thinking and deciding for ourselves based on our own professional expertise what's necessary in a particular area, we put ourselves in a disadvantage. And, you know, sometimes we talk in other contexts about, you know, developers who will come in and they'll ask for like a demolition by neglect. They just let something go for so long, and finally it's like, now I have no choice but to demolish this. You know, developers in larger properties do similar things. They let it go, they let it go, they let it go to sort of force your hand to give up, you know, incentives that we might not otherwise recommend. And it's, you know, it's something that happens in this space.
Well, thank you. I guess I have to say, you know, I'm just hearing a lot of people, everyone I talk to is just really concerned about this. So I think it's something that I hope everyone really gives a lot of thought to. The only other thing I have for you is also I've had a lot of people reach out and are concerned about, you know, the folks residing down at the canal and the river. And I'm just wondering, is there anything being done to help them as far as getting them services or looking at opening the shelter earlier, like they're doing in Allentown, you know, just because of, for their sake, the way they're living, God forbid, you know, if there's, you know, flooding there or fires or anything else. I mean, it's just not a real great way to be living, we know that. So is there anything that is being worked on to assist them to try to get them somewhere else?
Yeah, so I think, you know, members of our health bureau have talked about this a number of times. We have a really robust community connections program that, you know, provides direct services to individuals who are living in encampments, working with many individuals one-on-one, really understanding exactly who is where, getting people connected or trying to get people connected to services, trying to get people connected into housing potential situations through various organizations, and maintaining really strong relationships with all the existing service providers who are doing work down there. That's street outreach, that's New Bethany, that's Conference of Churches, people who are on the ground doing one-on-one, you know, kind of social work on a regular basis. You know, we do also have Bethlehem Emergency Shelter. That is a temporary, you know, cold weather shelter. Allentown is opening theirs early because they're clearing their encampment. You know, we are not in that.
I guess I'm just wondering, is there any way that we can open ours early?
Yeah, so because it's not ours, right?
Can we work with them?
You know, if they came to us with a request to open early, like that would certainly be something that we would entertain. They are currently restricted to their months of operation based on a zoning decision that predates, I think, a lot of us. But when they moved into their location at Christ Church in historic Bethlehem, there was a zoning, I think it was a variance that they needed probably to operate there, and there were conditions placed on their approval, which doesn't allow them currently to open longer than they are. So we've had conversations. They know that if they wanted to open for more months, or we collectively decided that that was something that was necessary, they would have to go back to zoning. We can't, because they're separate. Zoning is quasi-judicial. We can't administratively approve that, but that is something that we can support. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Any other new business? Councilwoman Gale?
I can make it quick. Most of my questions were asked. It's going to be for you, so you can stay there, but I just want to give a plug for a book because I do love to read. The Color of Law is a very interesting book. So anybody who wants to read it, specifically anybody on council, has to do a lot with zoning and the history of certain zoning districts. I also had a question about, not really a question, but an observation, as other communities that have said they wouldn't sweep are beginning to sweep. I just hope that we are preparing for the inevitability of what's to come, because we do have great relationships with who already exists along the canal, but that community is in flux, and I'm already seeing the effects of the people coming into Bethlehem from some of the Allentown sweeps, and just want to make sure that we're obviously aware of the increasing number as communities are sweeping into Bethlehem. The only other question I had, and it's surface level, I'll probably ask more questions.
The housing affordability and the cost, which has been somewhat touched on. Was this planning document, the CELDA, was it passed in front of the different housing affordability groups and environmental justice groups in the area to also weigh in on, in addition to the environmental groups?
Yeah, so I do believe that the SALO was presented to the Environmental Justice Steering Committee, maybe not in great detail, but I think it has been discussed in that group, I think. But to my knowledge, we haven't taken it specifically in front of our housing steering committee.
In the process, which I understand is years of work, have there been financial projections done on, hypothetical projects or existing published research that's been referenced about the cost questions that Mr. Hackett brought up and the impacts? I do understand that, there are plenty of eyes on this from developers who would raise questions too, but I'm curious what research on that front has been done.
I mean, we haven't done project specific cost projections. No, that wasn't a component of putting this together.
What about just general national trend studies and whatnot on the financial cost?
Yeah, I mean, I would have to talk directly with our planning folks who did most of this work. I mean, they are generally up to date on national trends and things, but I can't speak to specifically exactly what documents they reviewed or what research they've done.
And then the flip side of that is what, if any, are the team's key performance data points that they'd be looking at to see the success of implementing this over time? As this will, if precedent is true, right, or holds true, we're looking at decades of before there's an extensive overhaul of this document. So how will success be tracked?
Well, I think if you're talking specifically about the climate components, I actually think that it happens more in the climate action plan and the subcommittee
broadly
space. I think that would actually be my specific answer. I think that is the area in which you're seeing the most metrics tied to specific activities is in the climate action plan. It is in the different recommendations that are being carried out and kind of reviewed with the subcommittees, with their sustainability manager, et cetera. But we don't have, you know, like those are the climate components of the SALDO, and I think that would be where you're going to most look at, you know, those kind of metrics.
And then I believe at the last meeting we asked about incentives that might, you know, if there are some things that are suggested but not required. And we, like, one question that had come up was the stormwater, right? If you have more permeable surface, then you have less runoff, and that is solved naturally by the percentage fees. But what can we do, or what plans are in place to do in terms of incentivizing some of the things that are not mandatory?
I think that's probably worth a broader conversation, or actually not broader, but more specific, probably like section by section, I think, and I might need some other folks to, you know, kind of work through the answers to those. Like, you know, what might be an incentive related to trees is different than what's an incentive related to pedestrian improvements.
Sure.
And there's a lot of different folks throughout the city who I think might have expertise to weigh in on that.
If there were going to be some more incentives associated with the SALDO, would that be worked into the SALDO? Or would it be like, would it have to be unofficial? Like, are you allowed to put incentives in the SALDO? I think that's a clearer way of asking my question.
I'm not sure, man. I think it would depend on specifically like what you might have in mind, and then it would probably be something to review with the solicitors. It's a hard question to answer broadly.
Got it. Yeah, and I understand
just
it's a broad one.
Is so varied in the here.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Any other discussion from members of council?
Yeah, could I actually make a motion to hold? I'm going to need help on the specific wording of what I'm supposed to be asking for, but to hold this vote at our next meeting so that we have a little bit of time to look into some of the outstanding questions and get some of those clear bullet points out to the community members who were asking questions and have been engaged in this process so far, et cetera.
So it would be a motion to postpone until our September 2nd council meeting, I think is what would accomplish what you're asking for.
Yes, I think so.
So there's a motion on the floor to postpone the vote of the SALDO Agenda Item 8A, our September 2nd council meeting. Is there a second?
I'll second the motion.
Second by Councilwoman Leone. Any discussion? Do you want to elaborate on anything else, Councilwoman?
I think that what we've seen is great overall, and there's clearly been tons of work put into this, and I respect the work that has been done. But just considering, like I said in another comment, the precedent that likely will, you know, this is a huge ordinance, right? And it's going to be years until we look at this again. And we've seen other bodies take years to look at their part of it. So to take 2 more weeks to make sure that we talk to everybody that we want to talk to, and, you know, not that we haven't been doing that going along, I feel like it's a substantial enough legislation with a little bit more explaining and discussion that could be done, that 2 more weeks is not unreasonable.
We're not in a rush. My only request would be anything that you're looking for from the Planning and Zoning Bureau, if you could kind of spell it out.
Sure.
In writing, there's been a lot of discussion, but to really hone in on what are the specific questions that would most help you, you know, make a decision. And if that ends up being a large amount of questions, and we might need, you know, maybe even more than 2 weeks to make sure that we're answering that. And that's fine by us, you know, whatever you guys think is appropriate.
Sure, thank you. Yeah, and I have had some back and forth, but some of my questions kind of came up tonight in realizing, like, you know, that there was still some confusion out there for people who came.
But yeah, it's much easier to get the questions in advance and so that we can have the appropriate people weigh in and answer them on the spot.
Yes.
Councilwoman Leon.
I have questions about, like, do we have to re-advertise this? Is this, like, what is this, how does this affect us? Is it going to, I mean, granted, I know that the advertising, it costs money, but I would agree with Councilwoman Laird that this is a big enough ordinance, a big enough change to the city that we eat the cost, but I am curious as to how this affects procedurally what we're going to be doing going forward.
So we do have, I'll turn to the solicitor just to confirm, but I believe we do have anytime we're going to have essentially second reading, we have to advertise it. So because it would be back on an agenda in 2 weeks, we would have to re-advertise. Or is it because there are no changes, we wouldn't have to re-advertise?
You're required to make to re-advertise when there are substantial amendments. You're announcing at a public meeting that you are essentially, you know, postponing it to the next meeting. So my recommendation is that re-advertisement would not be required.
Only if we made substantial amendments.
Correct. Because then it's not the same ordinance.
So that answers my question. I would just say I am broadly in support of the SALDO as it is written, but given that it is a substantial document, I don't feel like it's been rushed. I feel like it has been a planning commission. We've been talking about it for a couple of years, but there has been some sentiment that maybe it caught people off guard. So I don't think giving an additional 2 weeks is detrimental by any stretch of the imagination. I don't see a problem with it if it's not going to cost us anything. So I'll support it.
Any other discussion on the motion to postpone? Councilwoman Cranston?
I think it's a good idea to postpone because there are a lot of questions and it is a lot of information. I mean, I tried to go through as much as I can, but I guess my only question is, and I'm not sure how to ask this, is with a lot of the developments, like several developments on the agenda next week that have environmental impact for zoning. So if we delay it, if there's anything that's relevant to any of the zoning issues, they'll be going to the current SALDO. Whereas if we would vote on it and pass it tonight, it would be relevant to the new amended one.
Generally, any application that is in process will be subject to the ordinances that are in place at the time of the time.
Right.
So it would be anything that came after that would be subject to the new.
So it would not change the app. Sorry. It would change next week, right? Like for
correct.
Any of those projects.
Correct.
It wouldn't change until after like the zoning meeting next week. Like we're looking at September that we'd be looking at change.
No, she's saying it wouldn't impact what happens at the zoning hearing, I believe.
Any application that is currently pending would be subject to the current
ordinances. Okay, got
it. Regardless of whether or not they received final approval, you know, before or after this ordinance was passed.
I thought we spoke at the last week something about retroactive, like the developer, that if it was more in their favor that they can go by. Do you call that? That if it could be retroactive? If there's a developer that's already in application and the new one is more amenable to what they want?
I thought that was in the planning, not zoning process.
We had that,
The first point as it relates to the meeting next week is that they're deciding based on the zoning ordinance, so this is zero impact on that regardless.
Right, no, I'm just saying, remember, I think the last meeting when I asked about the SALDO, the one thing was, in it, there is something in the amended one stating that if it's, would be amenable for a developer to go with the, if they're already in application,
and you want
and
to take
the new amendment would be more
new,
amenable to them, they could do it. But if there's someone appealing it, like a resident, that would not be the same.
I believe that's true, yes. So
okay.
If you're a developer, you want to take advantage of that. Like you have an active application, I think.
Right.
You have an active application.
I recall
you want to take advantage of something in a new ordinance that is passed while your application is still in process, I believe.
So for the developer, they can, it can be applicable for them, but not for someone who may be appealing what the developer is.
Generally, you know, you can't disadvantage someone by a new ordinance that's passed after they're already, their application's already in process.
Any other discussion from members of council? The only thing I would say before we call the roll is just, as was alluded to, and I know there were some great questions tonight that Ms. Collins couldn't answer on the floor, so in that two-week interval between now and the next meeting, anyone who has questions or things that are outstanding, please use the opportunity prior to the meeting, and we can discuss them, of course, on the floor, but to give Ms. Collins an opportunity to engage whoever she has to in City Hall to get into some of the broader minutia of the post tonight. Mr. Miller, call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0. 8A is postponed until second reading will be at the September 2nd, 2025 City Council meeting. Moving on to 8B, Mr. Miller. 40-2025.
The ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and North Antrim, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the general fund budget for 2025. Bill number 40-2025 is sponsored by Ms. Ramsey Smith and Ms. Leon.
Discussion? Call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passed 7-0. New ordinances. 9A, please.
The ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and North Antrim, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the non-utilities capital fund budget for 2025. Bill number 41-2025 is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Wilhelm.
Discussion? Call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolutions 10A.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an amendment to an agreement with Great Western Services Incorporated to provide additional material and labor to restore utility trenches. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Wilhelm.
Discussion? Councilwoman?
Sorry, I just have a question, I guess, Mr. Boswell and Alpha. In reading the reason, I guess I know in the past couple of years there were issues where like roads were paved and then UGI or whatever had to do whatever and then they had to be repaved. Is this the same situation where the road was newly paved road but then you have to repair old trenches and then have to repair them again? Is that the same kind of situation?
No, this is, these are trenches, this is additional work that we identified because we have money available to do more trenches before public works overlays the roads. So,
all right. So basically we're not just digging up new roads and having
them. Correct,
thank you.
Any other discussion? Call roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon? Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. 10B.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that $85,000 be transferred from account number 69024-66058, street overlays, to account number 69024-662056. West 4th Street sidewalks within the non-capital fund budget. The $85,000 will cover underestimated costs for the West 4th Street Improvement Bethlehem Business District Sidewalk Replacement Project. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Wilhelm.
Discussion?
I just want to clarify because I spoke to Vinny regarding this, and it's not coming out of the CDBG budget, it's from the non-utility budget. It's basically a transfer because the 4th Street sidewalks with the ADA ramps and all were costing more than we anticipated, even though the streets are a big priority. We have to comply with ADA and get the ramp construction done.
Thank you. Any other discussion from members of council? Call roll, Ms. Miller.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kubiak?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone? Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Pass 6-0. 10C.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the mayor and controller and or such other city officials deemed appropriate by the city solicitor are hereby authorized to execute a use permit agreement with Arts Quest for the 2025 Oktoberfest. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Kleitek and Ms. Wilhelm.
Second. Call roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kleitek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone? Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Pass 6-0. 10D.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, the Council of the City of Bethlehem of Northampton and Lehigh Counties, has found Palmer Township Act 537 Sewage Facilities Plan Update adequate for the wastewater disposal and management needs of the city, and hereby adopts the Palmer Township Act 537 Sewage Facilities Plan Update as revision to the official plan of the municipality. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Wilhelm.
Discussion?
Could I just ask for a little brief explanation of what this means for us? I read and I think I get it, but I just want to confirm.
So we're getting more business. That's the short answer. So currently, there's a existing community in Palmer Township where the sewage currently gets pumped to Easton for treatment. They're revising their plan to abandon that pump station and connect that small community of homes via gravity that's now going to flow through Bethlehem Township and then to City of Bethlehem to be treated at our wastewater treatment plant. So that change, so each township has a 537 plan where they manage or plan for their sewage planning for their communities. And whenever you're moving sewage across municipal boundaries, then you have to involve those other municipalities in terms of in reasonable agreements and getting buy-in from those municipalities whenever. So it's part of the Pennsylvania Act 537 forces the different municipalities to pass resolutions approving of the plan for that particular township. So we have to do the same thing because we serve 12 surrounding townships. If we do it, we have to involve those people. If they do it, they have to involve us. So the bottom line is that they're just changing the sewage flow from that currently goes to Easton, now it's coming to Bethlehem.
And we're confident that their standards in that development that would be switching meet our standards for what we accept?
Yes. It's all laid out in intermunicipal agreements. We have intermunicipal agreements with Bethel Township and Bethel Township and Palmer for all that pass through. So, yes, that's all covered.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Pass 7-0. Last agenda item 10E.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the mayor is authorized and directed to execute all application forms necessary to apply for a grant through the Multimodal Transportation Fund to the Pennsylvania Department of Community and Economic Development to improve the sidewalks on Getter Street and update the ADA ramps. Be it further resolved that the mayor is authorized to execute such other agreements and documents as are deemed to be necessary and or related thereto. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Wilhelm.
Discussion. Call roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. That concludes tonight's agenda. Get home safer.